Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a combined project of KCBX and our team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, host Fred Monroe is joined by guests from Transitions Mental Health Association. They're going to take a look at the increased mental health challenges facing young people in our communities. Join Fred and his guest as they address the resources available to young people and their families here on the Central Coast. Our discussion today will likely help us to better understand the need to stay attuned to these challenges. We invite you to listen and learn, and because today's show is recorded, we can't take your calls live on the air today, but you can send your follow-up questions to voices@kcbx.org. Right now, let's join Fred and his guests. Over to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be with you today. Glad to have folks with us that we can have a very good discussion about something that gets, to some extent, not addressed in our community enough and is important. And that is that the mental health challenges facing youth in our community is really a growing concern, and sometimes it goes unnoticed. And sometimes it the people involved, based upon their youth, are less than likely to reach out for help and assistance in other parts of the community. We are joined by staff members from Transitions Mental Health Association. And if you're not familiar with Transitions Mental Health Association, I assure you that we will give you a good understanding of what it is as an organization. Today with us is Kendra Bell. She is the Community Outreach and Presentations Coordinator for Transitions Mental Health Association. Roberto Cueva, he's the Central Coast Hotline Program Manager for Transitions Mental Health. And Caroline Cervusa, Cerusi. Anyway, she is a therapist in the community and works with young clients on a regular basis. We're going to discuss what's going on in the mental health community and also an event coming up in early September that is called Journeys of Hope Festival, which is really an outreach program for youth in our community and mental health issues. I'm sorry we can't take calls this morning, but as of the conversation that Brad had with you before we started the program, we can certainly take your questions and pass them on to our guests, and that would be by contacting us at voices@kcbx.org. That's just simply voices@kcbx.org. And also, if you listen to the program today and want some further information about it, I want to remind you that it is generally archived, and within about 48 hours of the program at the latest, you should be able to pull it up and review the entire program. We're dealing with an issue, of course, that sometimes is not the need for services from an organization like this are not things that people have prepared for, and we want to make sure that everybody's needs get addressed. I guess what we probably need to do first is explain what Transitions Mental Health Association is, because my hunch is a lot of folks, people think it's a government organization, which it's not. It's a private nonprofit.
Yeah, so Transitions Mental Health Association is a local mental health nonprofit organization here on the Central Coast. We specialize in eliminating stigma and promoting recovery and wellness for those dealing with mental health challenges. And we do this through a variety of resources such as housing, supportive employment, family support services, community programs, and then intensive mental health services as well.
How long have you been around?
Oh, gosh.
There's a quiz later on.
Let's see. We've been around, over 40 years or something like that. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. We have government programs that look at similar things, but obviously government programs can't do everything. So having an organization like this in the community, I think, is very important. Probably want to talk about the fact that also Central Coast Hotline is part of Transitions, and that becomes a key thing. So Roberto, I'm going to probably turn it to you. Tell people about Hotline.
So Hotline has been around, just like Transitions Mental Health Association, for around 40 years. So we've been in the community for a really long time. And the main services that we offer are mental health support, suicide prevention, and also resources. So those three main aspects are what Central Coast Hotline is all about. We really like to tell people that you don't have to be in a suicidal crisis to call or text in. You just might need someone to talk to. So it's a really great line for anyone who needs someone to talk to, some extra support, anyone who's thinking about suicide. And of course, we're free of charge, available in multiple languages. We're 24/7, 365, and always valuing your confidential and anonymous needs as well. So we're really conscious about that. We work with the police as well as mental health evaluation team to make sure that if anyone is in a suicidal crisis, that we can effectively support them.
I want to interject that because what I know about hotline, among other things, there's no such thing as a call to hotline that's not appropriate. So someone may be thinking about, oh, do I reach out to hotline, or am I being ridiculous, or am I bothering them? And I think that becomes a key factor, because your people will take the call, mm-hmm. and proceed as best they can. And there's no such thing as an inappropriate call, I guess.
Yeah, and I thank you for emphasizing that, because it's really important that we get people who are concerned for a loved one or just know someone that's struggling as well, who calls in for support for themselves on how to best support that loved one. And many times people can feel like they're a burden, or that they're not worth the time it takes to talk to them on the line. And we like to just say that anyone who calls in will be heard, will be attended to, and we'll try to collaborate with them as much as possible to really serve their needs and if needed, refer them out to a program that's really appropriate for their circumstances.
We talk a lot about, and we've mentioned it now probably three or four times, the concept of suicide or thinking about suicide. But what kind of challenges do young people face that maybe adults like us really are not aware of or not paying attention to? Because my hunch is, my children are all really old, but my grandchildren are, in some cases, are in this age group. They're probably not going to turn to me for assistance, because I'm just an old guy and a relative, and they don't want to embarrass themselves or feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So what kind of issues are we seeing that come up the most for youth now, that maybe they're not reaching out for assistance, or they're frankly afraid to reach out for assistance?
Mm-hmm. I think in the youth, we're seeing a lot of a variety in the mental health concerns that are present. But I think the top four, there's a study that came out about 2 years ago, the top four mental health challenges that youth face are anxiety, depression, ADHD, and eating disorders. And so those are typically the most prevalent mental health disorders that we see. And mix in with all of that is a high prevalence of suicidality. And I think something that gets maybe misunderstood a lot is the range in which somebody can experience suicidality. I think when a lot of people hear the word, they immediately assume that this person is on the brink or ready to take action, when in reality, a lot of the youth that I see, struggle mostly with suicidal ideation, which is just they think about it, it passes their mind, they don't have any intent, they don't have any action plan necessarily, but they're afraid to talk about it because of the fear that once they mention that word, much more action than they're ready for will take place, that people will assume you need to be hospitalized, you need to be, when really they're like, I'm just having these thoughts I've never thought of before. I don't even know, they might be pretty young, and like, I've never experienced the desire, to think to myself, I don't want to wake up tomorrow. But an adult hears that, and maybe they rush to not really understand but to take action, which I think both are incredibly important, but we want to make sure not to miss steps in understanding.
Hey, that was Caroline, by the way. And I mentioned your name, right, referenced that, because my thought is that as a private therapist, you probably run into a lot of situations where people literally say, I had no idea that there were therapists out there that I could talk to about this. Mm. I can talk to my parents, and frankly, I don't want to talk to my parents because it scares me or is part of the issues I'm facing. So there's a lack of knowledge for young people in that regard. I mean, the average adult knows that there are family therapists in the community They either know one, they have worked with one, or have other connections. But if you're 14 years old, that may be so far outside of your realm mm-hmm. of discussion mm-hmm. that it doesn't even occur to you that it's available to you.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I think one thing I really appreciate about, you know, I might have a lot of issues sometimes with social media, but I think one thing I do really appreciate with this sort of internet highway and the access that teens do have with each other is spreading the word, I think, happens a lot faster than it did maybe before. So once the word gets out there, once a few teens start going to therapy, maybe they see private therapists, they might tell their friends, hey, I have a therapist, and they start spreading the word. And so that's a huge way to get that out there. But one of the most important things that I see, because it is challenging for a teen who maybe doesn't drive or needs their parents' consent in order to start seeing a therapist, or believes that, you know, isn't sure what if they do need parental consent to see a therapist and how do I get there, is really starting at the school level. I think is a really good place to start meeting teens where they're at. I know that in our community, schools have been increasingly improving their mental health services. And I know, Kendra, I don't know if you wanted to speak to that, because I know you tend to be in the schools a lot, but the wellness centers in particular that have been popping up, I think, are doing an excellent mm-hmm. job at really getting teens first, you know, before referring out to private therapists, going, hey, you don't even need to leave campus potentially to do this.
Yeah, the wellness centers have been amazing, and we've seen a major difference in the way that the students are able to process their mental health and get resources a lot quicker and a lot less scary, too. It doesn't feel as vulnerable. They don't really have to go out of their way as much to get the resources that they need. They've had wellness centers open at Tuscadero, Morrow, AG, Napomo. I'm forgetting one.
Shandon.
But they're truly amazing, and they're just open spaces for students to get resources and the support they need, connect with other students who are dealing with similar things, and just get resources in a way that doesn't feel scary. We also do a lot of work in the health classes as well through our high school program. One of the topics that we do cover during the presentation is suicide and how to address suicide and have a conversation with somebody who is considering suicide. And there's definitely been a really noticeable difference in the way the students interact with that material. It feels like students connect with it a lot more because of either personal experience or experiences with friends or family members. So I think it's a very prevalent issue that needs to be talked about a lot more.
Mm. Okay. If you're a parent or a relative of a family that's got young teenage children, what are some of the first things that you can do to reach out to someone? Because it's a discussion no one wants to, well, everybody may feel the need to start it, but no one wants to start the discussion.
I think that really goes to talking about the stigma that comes from mental health conversations and conversations that come from suicide. So understanding that stigma is something that lots of people experience about these mental health conversations. And I think calling into the Central Coast Hotline to talk about these mental health conversations is super important, especially if you know someone who's struggling. Our family support services at Transitions Mental Health Association is absolutely a essential resource for a parent or a loved one who is currently helping someone through a mental health challenge or a mental illness. So I think that's a really essential program, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure, Kendra, you want to speak more towards family support services.
Yeah, so family support services is truly an amazing program, and like Roberto said, its whole intention is to support family members who are supporting another loved one through mental health challenges. They are offered this program in English and in Spanish, and they do this through support groups, one-on-one counseling, and also the judicial system class. But it's truly an amazing program, and everyone that runs the program also has lived experience and is very trained on these topics and knows how to best connect people to the resources that best fit them, while also being culturally aware as well.
Okay. I want to go back to Hotline, because my thought is that for a lot of these youth, the fear of talking to a parent, the mm-hmm. fear of even talking to peers can be tough. So if I'm thinking that I'm in some kind of crisis, and I need to reach out to someone, because when someone calls hotline, I mean, again, I get back to this point, because I think a lot of people might say, I didn't call hotline because I couldn't think of what to ask for.
Mm. Mm.
And how do you get across that bridge, and how do you get kids to understand that crossing that bridge is different for everybody, but please don't decide not to bother.
Mm.
Well, one thing that we like to tell, you know, our youth especially, is you can utilize the hotline for anything. Even if you just had a bad day but don't want to talk to your parents about it or don't want to talk to your friends about it, you can always utilize it. I've talked to a few different students who were just scared of, how do I start this conversation? What do I say? And I think it's as simple as just saying hey or hello. And I think that's also why the texting feature has been so amazing too, because sometimes there's a lot of anxiety that comes from talking on the phone, whether that's being afraid of being overheard by your parents or your friends, or just having general anxiety about talking on the phone in general. So I think the texting feature has been really, really helpful to kind of bridge that gap of being able to reach out but not having to feel as vulnerable while doing it.
I would suggest, as a layman in this conversation, that maybe something as simple as picking up the phone and saying, hi, I'm curious as to what hotline does. Can you tell me about it? So mm-hmm. someone calling hotline just for information about what hotline is, mm-hmm. is A, acceptable, and B, maybe a key way to start the conversation.
Yeah, we sure do get a lot of those calls and texts as well. You know, just making sure the line's working, and just going through the process of listening to the intro message that you get. I think just familiarizing yourself with calling in. That phone number is 800-783-0607. And again, we're 24/7, so you can call or text in at any point in time. And like Kendra said, we tell lots of people that they can call or text in even if they just had a bad day or just need something to talk about. Our main focus on the line is to ask very thoughtful questions so we can continue the conversation. And while we're having this conversation, we have trained professionals that are ready to listen and provide empathetic statements to show that we're listening as well. So that's our really biggest thing, is just showing that we're listening through the questions that we ask our callers.
The reminder that comes to me, my mind is too, is that some of the calls you may get that are the most important to make, for someone to make, may indeed come in at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's real clear. The people who are working at hotline at 3 o'clock in the morning chose to work those hours.
Mm-hmm.
You're not waking them up from a nap.
Exactly. We're always ready. We're always ready. You never know, because you're right. You know, we have lots of people who call or text in the morning, in the early morning, and either need someone to talk to or it's a crisis, and we're ready for either one at any point in the day. And we're lucky enough to have not just staff, but also volunteers and interns as well that work for the hotline. So we have people who volunteer their time to talk to the people in the community, and that's something that's really amazing, and I'm really lucky to be a part of and see the commitment that some of our community members have to keeping everyone safe and, of course, listening to people who call or text in. So mm-hmm. it's really amazing.
Yeah. I was just going to add, too, I think I get a lot of teens and adults also who put a lot of pressure on themselves to have the answers or to know what to say or what, you know, I really need to have all of this figured out before I call, whether it's calling a new therapist and telling them what I need or calling the hotline. And I just remind them, like, the people that you're calling, those are the experts, you know, those are the people who are trained. So if you call the hotline and say, I don't even really know why I'm calling right now, I felt the urge, or I found myself across this card and I felt really bad and so I called, that's okay, because you put it so well too, Roberto, is you have really trained professionals there to ask thoughtful questions and to get you to where you need. So I encourage people to sometimes not let the pressure be a barrier to calling. It's okay if you call and don't even really know what you're looking for quite yet.
Do parents call into, do parents who are concerned about their children call in and not know how to broach the subject?
I would say absolutely. You know, I think it goes back to stigma, right? These conversations are something that for a really long time have been a little taboo, I'd say, and depending on the household. But I think the new generation is really good about talking about it, and they want to talk about it. And doing outreach, I think we've been lucky enough to see that and see the younger population really be enthused about having these conversations. And so I think parents sometimes see that and, you know, really want to have the conversation but don't know how to get started. So they call or text in to get that collaboration going, to ask, is this a good question to ask my loved one or my child? So I think that's a totally great way to utilize the hotline and to have a collaborative conversation on how they can best have those conversations. Because at the end of the day, it's about supporting that loved one whatever way possible. So we'll ask the questions to help you come to those realizations of what's best for your situation.
So Kendra, this may come up often from people. If I talk to hotline, if I'm a teenager and I talk to hotline, if I'm a teenager and I call in for other services and other help from transitions, are you going to call my mother?
That is a great question. So the answer is no, especially through the hotline. It's anonymous and confidential, which means you don't even have to tell us who you are if you don't want to. I will let Roberto speak on that a little bit more during actual crisis calls, but at the end of the day, we are truly there for you and to support you in what you need. So whether that's just having a conversation or providing resources, we are not going to call your parents. We just want to support you in that moment especially. I'll let Roberto speak on that a bit more as well, too.
We encourage all conversations on the hotline, you know, so we really want people to have that confidence when they call or text in that they can share what's actually going on. If that's suicide ideation, that's all right. We want to know if you're having those thoughts as well, and we will try as much as possible to make sure that you're well supported and you're safe. So we really value ourselves on having a really good safety plan component to the hotline. So we talk with you about collaborative conversations of how to keep yourself safe if you're having those thoughts of suicide. And that phone number that you call in, again, 800-783-0607, you know that that is always available for you when you need it.
So yours, most of your services at this initial level of contact are by phone or by text. So from a standpoint of parents' concerns about what risks and vulnerabilities there are with their children are still, they're very safe because you're not having a face-to-face conversation with them.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's all confidential, all anonymous. So you know when you have that conversation, it will be just between you and that person you're having that conversation with. And I think that's absolutely essential in all the conversations. And these and other protocols that we've established over the many years that we've been around had led to our accreditation by the Association of Suicidology. And, you know, that's part of the requirements that they have. So we're really happy to be a part of, to be accredited and to have such a good reputation based upon these protocols that we have in place. So just really happy with the way that everything's set up in terms of confidentiality on the hotline.
Yeah. Caroline, when we're talking about the things that you do as a therapist, I guess some of these questions that become separate from the conversation with transitions, and that is, how do people find a therapist?
That's a really good question. One of the biggest, to be quite honest, referral networks that I've noticed is Psychology Today listings is a really interesting way to filter out, you know, who is in my community. Now, this is going to be more of a private directory rather than sending you to Transitions Mental Health or County Behavioral Health. You know, clinicians sign up to have themselves and their profiles listed here. And they, you can filter by insurance type, by needs. Is it couples counseling, youth counseling, individual therapy? Do I want help with trauma? Do I want help with OCD? You can filter for all of these things and find a therapist that way. It also depends on your insurance network as well. So if you do have for example, I'm a SunCal provider, and you can actually reach out to SunCal and ask, you know, I'm looking for a therapist, who can you refer me to? And there are SunCal case managers that are there to refer you to therapists and try to hook you up with somebody who matches, you know, their specialty might match the needs that you have. As well. So, and then of course, word of mouth, but I really recommend getting on some online directories. It can be challenging in this town, I think, especially what I hear feedback for is a lot of, you know, I'm having a hard time getting in with somebody who specializes in, you know, seeing youth, or there's a lot of wait listing. And so we really try to just build that directory online, talking to, I think being involved with family support services, you know, they have their own people that they refer out to. So knowing that sometimes finding a therapist in this area in particular can be challenging, but the directory and the network of this town being so small can actually be a big benefit too. Because like I said, for example, the family support services advocates have, you know, their clinicians that they work with. They have mutual clients that they refer out to, and TEMA supporting on the TEMA side, the therapist is supporting through the individual family or family work. And so they have a lot of connections in this town. So I suggest people getting in with an organization that has a lot of those connections as well if they're struggling on their own.
That also reminded me of our behavioral health navigators as well that we have here at TEMA. And those are people with lived experience who have gone through their own mental health challenges, who specifically specialize in helping you get connected to resources and support. So what they do is they can help you actually find support groups. They can help you go to the support groups. They can help you schedule appointments. But mostly they're there to help you navigate the mental health system. Because the mental health system can be very challenging and frustrating sometimes to navigate. And so their entire specialty is having that understanding and knowing the frustrations and helping you figure out the ins and outs so you can get the support that you need. And they do serve ages 13 and up as well.
Is there peer involvement with that?
Is it peer or parent?
Peer.
Peer. Okay. Yes. So because they all have lived experience, it's a very collaborative resource. They're there for you, and they also provide, you know, general support for you as well. So whether that's just having somebody to talk to, we also have our specialty behavioral health navigators that specifically serve ages 13 to 25 as well. What's really cool about this program is you do not need a parent referral. So if there is somebody who's 13 or up or not 18 yet, they can refer themselves to this program. And they can either do that through going through our website and looking at our behavioral health navigators, or they can also call or text into the Central Coast hotline, and they can get them connected as well.
So when all else fails, as far as getting the information you need, call hotline.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All roads lead to hotline.
Yeah. we're going to leave it with that just for a minute. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with you in a little bit. Our guests from Transitions Mental Health Association are with us today, having a conversation focused primarily on youth and on the challenges of mental health among youth. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you for a little bit more. This is Central Coast Voices.
Thank you.
Ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX, it's Fresh Air coming up this afternoon from 3 till 4. Marketplace from 4 to 4:30, followed by All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Fred Monroe and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Over to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad. This is a wonderful program. We're having a discussion with folks from Transitions Mental Health Association about mental health challenges of young people. I think it's to reiterate the point that's one of the reasons why I chose to put this program together put the radio program together to talk with these people about the program they're doing is because I do think that a lot of young people in their teens and early 20s tend to not reach out for help when they need it. And sometimes if they don't reach out when they need it, we get into major crises and catastrophes. So we wanted to talk about this a little more. What are the kind of things that you get frustrated by that in our community we seem to ignore, not pay attention to, or prefer not to talk about? Because I think that affects kids more than it affects old people like me.
I mean, I think to start, even just the general stigma surrounding mental health, there's unfortunately a large group of people that feel they don't even have mental health just because they're not necessarily going through mental health challenges. Which is why when we work in the high school, one of the first things that we even talk about is mental health as a spectrum and about how everybody has mental health. And you can fall anywhere on the spectrum at any given time. And you can always get re-regulated through your self-care strategies and support systems back into the green healthy zone that we use to refer to. But I think the first thing is just, you know, having the conversation that everybody does have mental health and trying to remove the stigma surrounding it.
To add on to that, I think we live in a really beautiful area. You know, it's really sunny. It's really nice. I think it's SLO was rated one of the happiest cities in America, if not the happiest. And I think we tend to focus on that a lot. And so when people talk about issues or their struggles with mental health, it could be a little awkward or they feel out of place and thus don't want to share because you're supposed to be happy here. It's a really beautiful, like, what's not to like here in SLO, because it's a really beautiful place. So I think just acknowledging that a mental health crisis can happen anywhere, even if you're in a really beautiful place.
As a lay member of this discussion, I would have to observe that people who want to avoid conflict sometimes run from some of the things that are most important for them to discuss on both sides of the equation. And I think that's probably important, the work that you do. And one of the reasons why we do a program like this is if we succeed with nothing else other than getting a few people to come to the Journey of Hope event we're going to talk about in a little bit and or pick up the phone and hotline, we've done our job of this program, which is to make sure people get the help they need.
Definitely. And I think looking at it, for me, to answer your question and also to add on to what you just said, part of, I think, my frustration sometimes is when we look at it maybe with tunnel vision or a hyper focus on one individual rather than looking at it more globally or having a wider lens, that maybe, for example, the teen might be struggling with these behavioral issues, but what does their environment look like, school, home, et cetera, and realizing that we have to address this from multiple angles. We can't just focus on what XYZ behavioral issues and throw them into therapy and pop them out and hope that they're all better. So I think, and this is what I love especially about Transitions Mental Health, but also just like the work that I see so many therapists in our community doing, which is we need to involve everybody that is relevant to the conversation, right? I try, everything that I can. Oftentimes there can be limitations, but if I'm working with a teen, it almost feels like amiss if I'm not talking to their parents. Obviously, there might be limitations or situations in which teens are not comfortable with me involving their parents. And I really try to honor that. But I also will work with them to say, look, this isn't all on you. And sometimes we have parents that are wanting to be really involved and some who they don't know that they can be involved. They don't, you know, I have parents, you know, that are nervous to talk to me because they don't want to impede on their child's therapy. And I really appreciate that. And we work really hard to respect the boundaries and confidentiality of therapy, but understanding I need to bring you in, you know, we all are a part of this and I need to know what's going on at home, what's going on at school. So having too much of a tunnel vision without a global perspective on what's going on, I think is a really big miss. And you can only get someone so far without addressing their environment. And so that's why I like trying to make this like, let's bring everybody in. Mm-hmm. Everyone's yeah. relevant to the equation.
Yeah, and I think to add on to that too, you know, I think another frustration is not having the language services needed for mental health services, especially, you know, not having enough Spanish-speaking therapists, or if there's no one in an organization that can speak Spanish so that those people that speak a different language can still feel supported, still feel comfortable reaching out for mental health support. So I think that's something that we actively need to work on and make sure that everyone has access to services, even if you don't speak English.
It's all about communication.
Yeah.
We have danced around it a couple of times, but we haven't talked about it very much. I'm looking at the clock. I want to make sure we don't lose track of this. You have an event coming up in September, Journey of Hope Festival. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we are super, super excited to talk about the Journey of Hope Festival. This is going to be a youth and young adult mental health focused event. It's going to be on September 14th at the Avila Beach Golf Resort from 12 to 4 p.m. And we are super, super excited. We're going to have a ton of fun activities to promote wellness. We are going to have a large resource fair so you can get connected to all of our local resources in our community. We're also going to have therapy dogs, art stations, yoga, a drum circle. We're going to have some local musicians who are going to be playing, which we're really excited for. We have Kate Armstrong, who's going to be opening for us, and then Carpool, who's going to close us out. And then the thing that we are super excited about as well is our keynote speaker, who is going to be speaking at our event from 1 to 2 p.m. Her name is Livy Redden, and she is a youth and young adult focused mental health specializer. And so she is going to be talking about her own experience and the work that she's been doing for our youth and young adults in our community, as well as having our own local youth speaker who's going to be talking about their mental health journey and their connection with the community as well.
This is going to sound sarcastic, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it anyway. There is no quiz to attend.
There is no quiz.
It's an event that is available to the community, primarily focused on youth, and you're welcome to just come. And if you do nothing other than decide you want to be a spectator, you are still welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, yep. That's true?
Exactly. Yeah. We're hoping that people will bring some blankets and towels and just hang out in the sun with us. We're going to have a couple food trucks as well, so there will be plenty of things to do to hang out and enjoy a fun day in the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come one, come all. I'll be emceeing the event as well, which I'm really excited to. So I'll be introducing everyone and transitioning, and it'll be a fun time. Yeah. And it should be really sunny. It's beautiful property, and just a fun time. Just if you have nothing else to do, please come by.
And most importantly, it is completely free. So it is there. You do not have to buy a ticket. You're welcome to show up. Again, it's from 12 to 4 p.m., so you can come and hang out anytime you'd like.
And I believe if you're not familiar with it, RTA buses run out to Avila also, right? So if you need a ride, there are other rides available. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's great. Yeah. This is not the first time you've done this event.
No. So, yeah, Journey of Hope has been happening for the last 14 years. The last 8 years, we've held it at New Life Church, but we decided to transition away from that this year to hopefully have it more a youth-focused event. So instead of having it in the evening, it's going to be in the afternoon, out in the sun, and we're going to have a lot more activities and things to participate in as well.
Wow.
Should be a great event. And I think the great thing about this is it's expanded so much over the years, and obviously there's so much new life being brought to it this year with how, you know, having it be over 4 hours, having so many interactive activities that really focus on wellness. But the heart of Journey of Hope, which has always been, let's get us talking about mental health. And Journey of Hope really was created as a way to bring people together to talk about it, right? Tima's mission, so much about that is reducing the stigma and getting the conversation started. And so that has carried over that, you know, through the heart of the last 14 years has been, let's get us all together and talking about this. And so that's why we have our local speakers that typically we always want to bring forward. What is your lived experience with this? We try to make it, you know, more of a conversation, just so that somebody in the audience might be listening to you going, I connect to that, or I didn't know somebody else felt the way that I do. I know that for me, that was monumental when I had somebody come up in college and talk about her struggles. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. And so I think that's what we really want people to leave Journey of Hope feeling is, one, that they're not alone and to learn more about it. And okay, I'm not alone. There's something I need help with. Now, where do I get this help? And that's the point of the resource fair as well, is to help people find access to those resources.
Yeah, we're lucky to collaborate with a lot of great organizations. Mm-hmm. I think we have 30 or around 30 organizations going to be at the event, which is a really great opportunity for anyone who's not familiar with the resources here in Slo County, which we're lucky enough to, I think, have a plentiful amount of resources that people can access in this county. So if you're unfamiliar with that, we highly recommend you come by and check out the resource fair and connect with a organization that we're lucky to collaborate with and call our partners.
Yeah. I want to back up a little bit, only because I think it's very important that people who may have tuned into the program later than the start of the program may not really be that familiar with Transitions Mental Health Association. And I think it's critical that people understand that it's available. So Kendra, why don't you give us a little bit of more background on the organization and the programs that you offer?
Yeah, so Transitions Mental Health Association is a local mental health nonprofit organization here in Slo County. Our main goal is to eliminate stigma and promote recovery and wellness for those dealing with mental health challenges in our community. And we do this through a variety of resources, such as our housing programs, our supportive employment. We have family support services for those helping a loved one through mental health challenges. We have our behavioral health navigators, and then also our intensive mental health services as well, which also includes our amazing Central Coast Hotline.
You know this stuff real well.
I hope so.
Yeah. You have some high school programs that we haven't really talked about very much, too. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So the high school program is actually my program, and our main goal is to work with the health classes and on school campuses to help educate our youth. So what we do is we go into the health classes and we teach our Mental Health 101 and Suicide Prevention curriculum. So the Mental Health 101 curriculum is just a general overview for mental health. So we talk about the 8 dimensions of wellness and how to address all aspects of your mental health and wellness. We talk about mental health as a spectrum to help eliminate the stigma surrounding mental health. We also talk about signs and symptoms of mental health challenges, so ways to help students identify when they're going through mental health challenges or mental health challenge, so they can also get the resources they need sooner. We discuss some of the most common types of mental health challenges as well, to also just bring into the conversation that this is a common thing that people struggle with, and it's also not uncommon to deal with more than one of these at the same time. We also discuss the window of stress tolerance and how to navigate when you're out of your window of stress tolerance and how to get re-regulated in those moments through self-care strategies. We talk about why self-care is so important for mental health. We also talk about negative self-talk as well and positive self-talk. That's been something that we've noticed that youth have been struggling with a lot more. Just how they talk to themselves, how they talk to others. And so we give them some tools to utilize if they ever find themselves engaging in negative self-talk to hopefully break up those thought patterns long enough to think about something else. And then most importantly, we talk about suicide and suicide prevention. So we discuss how to identify when somebody might be considering suicide. And we do that through our behavioral clues, situational clues, and then indirect and direct verbal clues. We also have a unit that we do specifically on joking about suicide. That's been a really prevalent issue that we've seen with our youth. That's become a really, really common thing that we hear in day-to-day conversations, and especially social media. And that is a major behavioral clue for suicide that unfortunately doesn't get talked about enough. And then lastly, we also talk to them about how to actually navigate a conversation with somebody who is actively considering suicide. We do that through our tool called ALEC, which stands for Ask, Listen, Encourage, and Connect. And those are the tools and the steps, the procedure that you would follow if you ever are navigating that conversation.
Caroline, earlier you mentioned, that hadn't really come up in the discussion before that, that eating disorders are a more prominent factor for youth than we pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that a lot of times, a lot of other mental health disorders often includes appetite changes in that you might see with eating disorders, and so it's easy sometimes to miss that or to not understand, you know, my teen might not be eating as much, but is this because they're really stressed out and anxious, or am I looking at an eating disorder? But we do know that eating disorders are one of the most fatal mental health disorders that is out there. So it's something that is very important to be addressed, and to be addressed early for the health of our teens. And so anytime I see someone who, you know, talks to me about what do I do, is I love how the last one of that C was connect, as we want to connect to resources. I let parents know, I let teens know. I say teens because a lot of times they feel like they are really on the front lines of their peers' behavioral health and mental health issues, and that they feel like they need to be the ones to assess, to evaluate, to fix, and to remind them that our goal here is to help everyone understand how to get somebody that you are concerned about connected to the proper resources, and that you don't have to figure this out yourself. You don't have to diagnose your friend, your teen, your partner, anybody, but to recognize common signs and symptoms that might suggest, hey, we might be dealing with an issue that needs to be addressed further. And that's really, really important. And so we have sort of a list of those signs that we give, one in the teen presentations, right, to how do you notice if a friend might be struggling? And they're very similar to what I would tell caregivers, you know, which is changes in sleep, changes in appetite, changes in mood. Parents always talk to me about that one. Well, how do I know? Because, you know, I remember my teen years. I was moody. I went through it. I was up and down. So how do I know what is normal, you know, growing pains and transitions in life through this time versus something that might be a sign of a bigger issue? And again, I tell them, you don't have to know that. You don't have to have that answer. You can bring them to someone to help them sort that out. So changes in appetite, changes in social desire, right? Someone who is normally a really social person but has really withdrawn. And sometimes on the flip side, you might have someone who's a natural introvert and all of a sudden they're like bubbly and energetic and wanting to do all of these things that they don't normally want to do, which sometimes you can think, great, you know, they're getting out there, but actually could be a sign that something is going, you know, something's off in their brain. Chemistry perhaps, or going on internally. So we want to make sure that sometimes things that societally we deem as maybe we value social time as a positive thing, that someone who's really acting outside of what is normal for them, it still might be an indicator that they could use some support or evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to add really quickly to the youth high school program is that we also do mental health support groups as well on campus. So that's a group of students that we work with to expand on these topics about mental health, and also just create a support system within the school with the peers that they're interact with on a daily basis. So that's been really successful, and I've been happy to also begin a Spanish support group at Aurora Grande High School as well, so we can make sure that everyone's has that access to mental health support.
Yeah, I realize we're focusing on youth, of course, that's what the conversation's about. But we focused primarily on high school kids and around those age categories. It occurred to me in this conversation, I should have thought about it before, we have Cuesta College, two campuses of Cuesta College. You have Hancock College in Santa Maria, and we have Cal Poly. And college-age students have kind of a double burden, if you will, and that is the challenges of the peer challenges are tough. But a lot of your time for college is spent completely away from family or your normal support environment that you're used to. How do you reach out to those folks? Or, I mean, I realize they can, anyone can dial the hotline phone number.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any things that you specifically do for Cuesta and Hancock and Cal Poly.
Yeah, so we actually work pretty frequently on those campuses. We do a ton of outreach on campus. So we go and set up an informational booth and we just share about our resources. We help answer questions if people have any questions. Or even just have, you know, a connection if someone, you know, is struggling and is like, oh, there's a mental health specialist. We do have a lot of students who will, you know, tell us the story and ask for resources and we're able to get them connected. We also do presentations on campus, too. So one of the ones that we do is through their psych class, and we do a personal storytelling presentation where we talk about our own mental health journey and ways that we've connected to mental health and found resources or found support, just to help make them feel that they're not alone and that it is a common experience and that, especially in college, you know, there are going to be things that bubble up, but you can always, you know, help find resources for yourself and find connection and support.
Yeah, and we really do welcome Cal Poly students to apply to be either intern or volunteer at the hotline as well. So we have a lot of connection through with Cal Poly through that as well, because it's really important for those Cal Poly students to gain experience, and many students see that Central Coast Hotline can be a great experience for them if they're interested in the field of psychology.
Well, that's a very good point, because what you're basically reminding our listeners is that the people who, if you want to call Hotline, there may be people your own age or close to your age as college students answering the phone and working with you, and they've been trained to be part of that process.
Exactly.
Yeah. As our listeners seem to know, and that is that because Fred talks too much, I make a point at the end of the show of always making sure that my guests have a chance to kind of put in their own last words. Caroline, I'm going to start with you. What do you want to make sure people don't forget walking out of this room?
I think for me, the most important thing I would like people to leave with is that it really, this takes a village. Philosophy around mental health is that it's hard to identify alone, it's hard to get out of alone, and that, you know, we are all sometimes our best allies in this, is that I might not always recognize that something feels off, but someone who maybe has been around me a lot might know that, or I might know that I need support, but all the self-help books in the world, doing it alone may not get me to where I need to be. And so knowing that it is so important to tap into our community resources, both as the person who is struggling and is reaching out, and also as the community then reaching back, you know, it's bi-directional. We want it to go both ways, that our community is reaching out to those who may be struggling. And so I think that is the most important thing. And that's why I really admire so many of the programs that the community does offer, because if you're in a mental health crisis or you're struggling, trying to navigate the system, trying to do all of this alone, it's a tall, tall order. And then it can leave people feeling like, what am I doing wrong? Why am I not getting better? So that's the biggest thing, is it really takes a village.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Roberto.
So the phone number for the hotline. One more time.
You have this secret fallback position.
800-783-0607. One more time. 800-783-0607. You can call anytime.
Also, for any students or parents listening, this number is also on the back of every single student ID card for any of the high schools in SLO County.
Oh, wow.
So if you ever miss this number, it is on the back of your student's ID card for the school.
And a couple other things, too, just so that our listeners are aware as well. SLO has a suicide rate that's higher than the national average, and 10 to 14-year-olds are the fastest growing group attempting suicide in the United States as well. So this is a really prevalent issue, and it's super important that if you don't know about Central Coast Hotline or you don't know the best way to support someone who's having thoughts of suicide, highly encourage you call in or text in, either for yourself or for a loved one.
Thank you. Kendra.
All right. I just want to reiterate the Journey of Hope Festival that we are going to be hosting on September 14th at the Avila Beach Golf Resort from 12 to 4 p.m. This is going to be a youth and young adult mental health focused event. We are going to have live music. We are going to have an amazing keynote speaker who specializes in youth and young adult mental health. And on top of that, we're going to have a ton of wellness activities such as therapy dogs, art, yoga, a drum circle, lawn activities, and most importantly, some amazing food trucks. So bring a blanket, bring a towel, come out and hang out in the sun, and we'd love to see everyone there.
I'm going to give you a chance for one other thing, too.
Yes.
You're a predominantly volunteer-supported organization with what you do. The people who answer the phone mostly at Hotline and things like that. Mm-hmm. If someone is listening to this program and would like to become a volunteer, what kind of resources, what kind of people are you looking for, and how do they contact you to basically find out about being a volunteer?
So if you're interested in volunteering for the Hotline, you do have to be 18 years or older. We're mostly just looking for people who are non-judgmental and who have a passion or want to have a better understanding for mental health. If you want to get connected, we always recommend you can either text into the Hotline yourself, or you can also go through our website. We do have a volunteer page listed, so if you're interested in volunteering through the Hotline, we would love to have you. You go through a very extensive training before you do take any phone calls, so if you're worried about not knowing enough or not having enough information or resources, that's totally okay. We will make sure to give all of that information to you. And lastly, if you are interested in volunteering but you're not really sure about the Hotline, we are also always taking volunteers for our Growing Grounds Farm and Nursery as well, and that is from, that's Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 2 p.m., I believe. Don't quote me on that. Check our website. that is just also an amazing way to volunteer. That's through our supportive employment program, and it's a great time. You just get to go and hang out in the sun, work side by side with our clients, and just pot some plants and weed some plants and all that fun stuff. So it's super fun.
And one more thing about the volunteer, if you're interested about volunteering at the Hotline, is that we prefer that we have people from SLO and Santa Barbara County, as those people are local to the community and know a lot more about local resources and just the general needs of our community as well. So highly recommend that our volunteers are from San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara County.
We're all in this together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
good way to put that. Thank you for that. This has been Central Coast Voices. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be here, and I don't have all the notes on her program yet, but she'll be putting on her program next week. I'll be back in about 4 weeks, and we want to do a wonderful job of sharing this among the four co-hosts now, so you get different voices as part of Central Coast Voices. We're a production of KCBX Public Radio, and if you want to give us any input about Central Coast Voices, or specifically if you want to contact us about anything that went on in today's program that may be of needed help for you, we can pass it on to Transitions Mental Health, and that is voices@kcbx.org is our email address. It is the best way to find us. Thank you to Brad Kyle, our in-studio engineer. It's always great to have him around and keep us sane and make sure you can still listen to us. Thank you to today's guests, Kendra Belch, Roberto Cueva. This is terrible. I'm sorry. Anyway, Caroline Cerusi. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us.